This podcast contains swearing and occasional disturbing content.
I don't need to live in this physical realm. I walk around in the physical realm. In the spiritual world is where I live. I exist in places you never even dreamed of.
Strange.
Strangers podcast episode 19. Think about it, even though we just discussed it.
We did.
Cole's part three, not part one, not part two. We are part three. This is the first time we've done a three-parter.
It is, yeah.
A freeway, you could say. A menage a trois.
A menage a trois with all those Colts. Oh, skanky.
Yeah, menage a trois with. That's only two people because you are the third.
Yeah,
so you'd have to choose two from Colts. Got to be the leaders. You could have a menage a trois with L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh, God.
And Charlie Manson.
Oh, fucking hell. Oh, yeah, David Berg and fucking, oh, God, I don't know.
My name's Gav. Welcome.
This is High Strangeness and I'm Sarah.
Yes. And, yeah, like I said, we're coming back to do the old Colts.
Yeah.
It's been really interesting listening to these.
Yeah, it's been really good doing the research and stuff because obviously knew of quite a lot about most of them anyway, but it's really cool to kind of go in depth and do the research on them and find out all the little bits and bobs.
Well, an update from last show, the Scientologists haven't come for us.
Yeah, totally. We're still safe. We haven't been got by the Scientologists.
I don't really think that is a thing now. I don't know. I don't know. Do you think?
I don't trust them.
It's one of those things, though, because there's so many true crime podcasts and so many fucking things out there, and everybody's making their own content and product nowadays and material. So much of it is out there. I guess they probably look at listenerships. If we were a fucking Joe Rogan podcast,
yeah,
they'd be like, oh,
yeah, we need to keep an eye on them
because they could also be so influential to other people. Yeah. We don't want them to influence the way, as in, like, not us as a pro thing.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So then we might get got. We might get spied on.
Before we get into it, though, these are new things happening in the world, and it makes us think, like, well, for a future episode, we probably need to do celebrities gone wrong.
Yeah, totally.
This is very early on, so if you were listening to this show in 2023. You may think, well, that came out all wrong. So we're just going to say what's happening a little bit. Like, we've had Marilyn Manson's just had some thing come out about him being an abusive person over many, many prolonged years of in relationships in a manner which would be treated as inappropriate, and taking the BDSM thing to a
It's more like abusive relationships. It's more like domestic violence, because we don't know what's happening.
No, we don't know. It's very hard to go into that whole thing. This would be a discussion that we could have for another episode.
Yeah.
Because I still like Rosemary's Baby.
I know, and I like that as well. Polanski. And I really like the film The Tenant.
And I like The Ninth Gate.
I really like Jeepers Creepers, the movie, you know. And I really like Kevin Spacey as an actor.
Well, Jeepers Creepers, with that director, he actually went to prison and did his time.
Yeah, totally.
But it's still the stigma. You still did that.
Yeah.
At some point in a time, your mind thought, this is a good idea. And we all know, hopefully most people have been brought up to know what's right and what's wrong.
Totally.
Ten Commandment bullshit.
Just your moral compass. Yeah. It's quite hard with the Marilyn Manson thing, because I can look at that. I've been a Marilyn Manson fan of his music for such a long time.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult to now go, right, you know, obviously looking at Marilyn Manson, you know, he's not going to be a great person.
You look at Jimmy Savile, you think he's a fucking pedo anyway.
Yeah.
Without even knowing he's a pedo.
Marilyn Manson, it's kind of obvious that he's not going to be a very nice person, I would say. But at the same time, that doesn't give
That's
him...
interesting you saying that.
Doesn't give him
you're
a free
You're someone covered
pass.
In tattoos and stuff like that. And you know, you get a stigma from certain people, certain things, and they obviously get you right. So I was wondering if you're going that way, but
No, I'm not going by his appearance.
Because a lot of people will straight away jump in. Yeah. I thought you were going that, and I thought that's a strange way for you to go like that.
I've read his books and stuff, you know, and I know that he did used to kind of get fans backstage, young girls and stuff, you know, and do not very nice things to them. Not in a massive like way, but he wasn't very pleasant to them. So I've always known that he's had that element.
But as
you know,
I was saying to you, any of that stuff
is
going
to
be up for the book. And if you haven't actually got any people saying that stuff.
But then
it only takes one person.
It depends what's
going to
come out. Because now, you know, as we've seen with other people, and obviously with the Jimmy Savile case as well.
Yeah, then Weinstein.
You know, as soon as people come out and people start speaking out against that, other people feel strong enough to come forward and tell their story as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see what comes out with that one. But it is quite hard to kind of then go, I'm not going to listen to his music anymore. You know, but at the same time, being a fan of that, I don't think he should get a free pass because of that. You know, it's not enough for him to go, it's Marilyn Manson, never mind. You know, we all knew he was a dick
music,
anyway.
Which is really frustrating. I know you were. Well,
yeah, definitely. So it's really hard. I've not listened to any Marilyn Manson since I've heard, and I kind of would feel bad, I think, listening to it, but I really enjoy his music. It's always been a big part of my life.
It's good.
It's really hard, you know, and like we were saying with the other stuff, things like the film American Beauty, that film's fucking amazing. Kevin Spacey in that is just fucking phenomenal, but obviously there's issues with him as well. So it's kind of like, you know, how far do you go to separate the person from what they're doing? Because like with that, obviously that's someone else that wrote that film, you know, that was someone else's kind of idea of that
he's
person.
Just yeah.
He's just playing the character.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tricky. It's fucking tricky.
It's tricky. DMC dropping in there. And then the other person's Armie Hammer. But this is so
that's
new.
Bizarre.
This is so new that it could all be fake. So that's why we can't sort of speculate anyway. I am going to say one thing. Thought his name was fucking Arnie.
Arnie Hammer. I know. Is it short for something, though? Is it short for, like,
I think it's
Armani or Armando or...
I don't know. But Armie Hammer's saying, like, oi!
I didn't even know who
George,
he was when you were saying...
George, have you got your nails? Yeah. Oh, it's good to be in the army, isn't it? Oh, yeah. What else do we need? We need a hammer. What hammer? An Armie Hammer.
Yeah, that's terrible.
That's a really bad joke. I wasn't trying to say joke. I was just trying to think. It's really weird that he's called Armie Hammer. I was trying to chuck Armie Hammer in some sort of sentence there. I've never really thought of that, really. Because if you're in that army, you probably wouldn't call it the Armie Hammer. You just call it the hammer, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Get the hammer. Anyway, right.
Moving
so on. Moving along. Tumbleweeds. Moving along. Cults part 3. You have got two last for us.
I have, yeah.
Nothing else, no little extras, just the two main. Now, these two are a little bit harder, you say?
I mean...
You mentioned last time they might be a little bit more full-on.
It's the last one, really, that's kind of full-on. I mean, Om Shinrikyo is pretty full-on. The Rock Terrio and the Ant Hill Kids in Canada... That's going to be quite hard going, especially if you don't like the idea of surgery.
I'm not even talking like surgery.
I'm talking backwoods of Canada surgery, rusty pliers.
Thing is, though, I kind of don't mind that too much because that kind of makes you think wrong turn or some shit.
Okay, but yeah, it's going to have men and ladies cringing, honestly. Fucking cringing. You are going to want to cross your legs.
Didn't you want to do an episode where it's about people's cocks being cut off by the other half or something?
Yeah, I was saying, why don't we do like a
we should do
a,
that
a, infidelity revenge, like, or like
you've been cheating
abuse
on me
revenge or something like that.
Because we were
chatting about it the other day, weren't we? And I said, I bet there's been loads of cases of women super gluing their blokes' cocks to their stomachs while they're asleep.
And I said to you, I was like, oh God, that probably happened. Like, I said to you, that's probably happened. You're like, absolutely. And I was like,
yeah,
oh, that
100%.
Means that when they wake up and they need to piss, they're going to piss into their upwards.
Imagine how much that's going to hurt as well to get that off. If you've got super glue on your bell end,
you're not going to be able to use.
Not going
to
be
your willy for a little while.
Yeah, it's such a good revenge. Yeah. So yeah, I thought we could do
I'm well up for that.
We could do a revenge episode.
Not you super gluing my dick to my tongue.
Yeah, no,
I mean,
I wouldn't
well
do it to you, Pickle.
Thank you. I don't wake up with piss in my mouth.
Yeah, a revenge episode I think would be really cool.
Oh, I think that'd be really good. Yeah, and I like the next episode we're going to do.
Yeah,
we'll get to that. We're going to talk about that at the end, but that's going to be a fun one because we wanted to go. When we go hard, we want to go fun afterwards.
Huh?
That sounds weird.
Yeah, that does sound weird.
Once we've gone hard, we go a little softer. Then we get hard again.
We've had quite a few, like, these have been quite intense episodes, and also they've been, like, research intense as well.
I know,
me.
For you. It's quite good, though. You did say that you doing the episodes is quite good. Like, Jimmy Savile's completely out of your mind now.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like... Fred and Rose, I can kind of
compartmentalise
them. I can put them in a little box then and kind of not really think about them.
Which is good.
Even
I'm
though
glad.
That makes me sound really weird because it makes
not
me
really.
Think... Well,
what,
it makes,
what makes
me
you look
sound
like you think about
like
that all
I
the
think
time.
About Jimmy Savile loads... When I don't. And I don't sit there and think about Fred and Rose West, but sometimes, like, it'll pop in my head and I'll kind of be like, fucking hell, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
But now we've kind of done it, it's like, right, they're done. They're in their little box now. I've packed them away. They're in storage.
Like little ones, little people. It's like,
yeah,
it, like
little
in,
mini Fred and Rose. They're
like
in storage.
the woods, cabin in the woods. Where it's got the little boxes of horror things.
Except
you've got fucking Jimmy Savile in a box and fucking all the worst people.
Oh, that'd be so good.
That'd be the worst cabin of woods. Who are we going to send out? Send out Jimmy.
Oh, no, fuck
now
that.
Now then.
Yeah, coming out with
Why
his
you
fucking
asleep?
Pedo radar on.
Another quick thing, another bit of house cleaning. We've changed environments. We decided, like, the other environment we've been recording, because you got to remember, guys, we are still in the teething stages of this show. Like, Sarah and I are even just still, even though we're, like, been together for a long time and get along absolutely fine, we're still getting our flow going as podcasters. Like,
yeah,
I do
especially
show.
Me. I think you've been doing it for so long with Dan
like
as well.
7 years,
like, you know what
show.
You're doing. I'm
but
still a bit kind of like, oh,
it's still
shit.
Getting a rhythm with the partner back and forth, and especially as you do so much research and me butting with fucking nonsense. But we're doing it. But we've changed environment as well, guys. So hopefully it's going to sound a little bit better. I wasn't too happy with the way I sounded so much. So, and that's me done.
Okay.
Really, with all my nonsense talking. It's up to you now.
Okay, so we're going to get started on cults.
So lovely listeners, get comfy, get a hot chocolate, get whatever you want, get your slippers on, get your dog on your lap or your cat, give him a little stroke while you have a little listen, or you're driving down the road, and listen to cults.
Don't stroke your cat while you're driving down the road, though. Probably
be weird.
Need both hands on the steering wheel.
There's definitely going to be people out there who go driving with their cats in the car.
100%, I'd go driving with my cats in the car if they'd stay in the car and be normal. If Vince would just get in the passenger seat, I would take him for a little drive. It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go off on another monkey pet tangent with my cats in the car tangent. That's all I'm going to say on that.
So, are you ready to indulge?
Yes, I am.
In the world of... Now, who are we up first?
Okay.
What year or era and what country?
So, first one up today is going to be Om Shinrikyo, and you probably remember them from the sarin gas attacks on the the Tokyo subway in 95.
Yes, I remember, actually, the last podcast on the left, I remember hearing them, they sort of talked about it.
They did
just,
a big breakdown
just,
of that.
Yeah, it was just quite like, what the fuck, really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. I'm not going to go into it in massive detail as much as they did. I'm going to kind of skirt it a bit because we would be here all fucking year. But yeah, it's a good one to look into, you know, if you're interested in that kind of thing. And there's some good documentaries on YouTube about it and the actual act, you know, of the sarin gas.
When did it happen?
95.
Okay, so not really, you know.
It's not massively a long time ago. I was like 16 when
but
it happened.
But kind of pre-broadband, pre-like fast internet. That was early. That's very, very
early stages. So
it's good to know. That's why I always sort of say the year and country and stuff, because it's really good to just get those base facts down before we go into discussing what's going on, especially to know if there's internet or not. Because especially with a cult, because say terrorists, I bet they were like, internet?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, this is well good. Communication at light speed.
Well, yeah, you know, if you remember with the Heaven's Gate one as well, they started using the internet quite a lot, didn't they? And they were big on, like, web pages, designing web pages for other people, you know, and using the internet as a tool to kind of get stuff out there. Now, I'm sure they probably would have loved it today, the VR and stuff. They could have pretended to be on the spaceship, couldn't they? No need to cut their balls off and fucking kill themselves. They could just put VR on.
I guess. But yeah,
hasn't there been a lot of fucking castration in these episodes? I was just thinking, because we've got some coming up, like in the last one that we're going to discuss, the Canadian guys. But like, there's been so much castration.
What do you think that is?
I don't know. Well, it seems like there's been a lot of.
If you're castrating, you're pretty much stopping the line of human evolvement.
Power, and, I suppose,
and,
isn't it? Taking
and being
power
able to reproduce.
People.
So. That must be a real big part.
Yeah.
Not being able to produce more people on the planet.
Mm.
I don't know.
Crazy. Okay, yeah. So we're going to get into it now and talk about Om Shinrikyo. So it's now known, it's still going today, it's now known as Aleph, which is A-L-E-P-H. Om Shinrikyo was a Japanese doomsday cult founded by Shoko Asahara in 1984. They carried out the deadly Tokyo subway sarin gas attack in 95 and was also responsible for the Matsumoto sarin attack the previous year. So they did another one before that, but that's like not really unheard of, the previous one.
Okay.
So Shoko Asahara, he was born Chizuo Matsumoto on March 2nd, 1955, into a large poor family of tatami mat makers in Japan's Kumamoto Prefecture. Mat makers.
Oh,
you know, the
sorry.
Mats.
Yeah. I thought you were creating
mats.
Maps.
No,
like,
mats.
Interesting.
They were weavers.
Okay.
He had infantile glaucoma from birth, which made him lose all sight in his left eye and go partially blind in his right eye at a young age, and he was enrolled in a school for the blind. Asahara was known to be a bully at the school, and he took advantage of other students by beating them and extorting money from them.
Blind bully?
Yeah.
A blind school?
Because they were legit blind.
What a cunt.
They were legit blind, whereas he could kind of see
a
little bit.
Oh, I've got 20% in my right eye. Oh, bang.
Definitely.
Didn't see that punch coming because you're blind.
Yeah.
What a cunt.
Well, apparently he used to, like, offer to walk them places for money, like if they wanted to go to a shop or something.
Then fucking mug them or something?
No, he'd get them to pay him to walk them to a shop or something, and then, like, when they wanted to go back, he'd make them pay him again. He was like, no, I only offered, you know.
Well, that's
you're
only
going to
work
pay.
Once, though, because the next time he says it, it's like, well, you're not fucking taking, I'm not going to
shop
again, you can fucking walk me back again.
Apparently, it worked because he graduated in 1977 and he had $30,000 in his bank account.
So he's already coming from a hustler background.
Yeah, he's just a conner.
Yeah,
he loves
con artist,
to. He loves to con.
Hustler.
Yeah. So yeah,
so
you'll
he's
see that.
Conniving, isn't he?
Yeah, you'll see that coming up as well. He fucking rinses people.
Fucker.
He married Tomoko the year after, and using her money, he opened an acupuncture and Chinese medicine centre.
So how do you rip people off in this place?
He sold orange peel in an alcohol solution named Almighty Medicine, and it cost $7,000 for a 3-month treatment.
This dude's got fucking skills.
He's
thinking,
fucking,
like, what the fuck?
Found his niche, you know. Fucking crazy. So, yeah, we'll get.
Right, so
well,
we've got a con artist, basically. We've got a 20% in right eye vision Japanese con artist.
Yeah.
Right, brilliant.
Basically. It gets worse.
Excellent.
It gets worse with his ripping off.
Oh, God.
In 1981, Chizuo was convicted of practicing pharmacy without a license and selling unregulated drugs, for which he was fined 200,000 yen.
Because essentially, all cult leaders are con artists.
Yeah.
Right, okay. This is why doing this show with discovering stuff. I myself am always just going,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's good to break it down, isn't it? You can kind of see,
really see where decompartmentalise and see where things are the latest.
That's
and
why,
how it makes the individual, and then that individual goes and makes this umbrella corporation of a cult, and then gets all these suckers. No offence, all these people who are. Generally,
well, vulnerable.
Not suckers.
They're vulnerable.
That's a totally wrong thing for me to say. Yeah, vulnerable people who just want in a place in life or need something or someone. Not suckers. That's, I feel bad saying that, actually. Yeah, who actually needed something and they unfortunately fucking caught on to the wrong person.
Yeah.
Okay, go on. Sad, really.
Yeah, it is. Mm. Chizuo also became interested in religion around this time, and he began to study various religious concepts, including Chinese astrology and Taoism, later practicing Western esotericism, yoga, meditation, esoteric Buddhism, and esoteric Christianity. I did have a little look up, because I was like, esoteric gets mentioned loads, and I don't, like, legit know if someone said to me, what does it mean? So it means intended for or likely to be understood by only a small number of people with a specialised knowledge or interest. So that's the meaning of esoteric. So he's studying all the, like, secretive aspects of those religions, I suppose, the more lesser known.
Okay.
In 1984, Chizuo founded what would be the basis for his future death cult, the Om Association of Mountain Wizards.
Could we get, at the end of this, could we just make the ultimate cult by taking the best bits from all of them?
Yeah,
aliens, okay. Wizards, fucking Bigfoot, or what, do you know what I mean? Put all of it and make the most wackiest fucking cult we can.
Yeah, because we had an Egyptian alien cult a little while back, didn't we? I think in the first episode.
If you got the names of all of them as well, put them together and make this new name.
Yeah.
I was like, God.
We'll have a look and we'll announce that in the next episode.
Announce our cult.
Tell you what our cult's going to be.
Secretly, guys, we've slowly tricked you in for this True Crime podcast, but we're sneakily going to get into your mind because we're actually a cult.
We're roping you in. Oh, God. Going to sell some tea made out of my cat's hair.
Glad cat's hair.
Yeah, okay. So this cult is just nerds. Honestly, this cult is just a cult of nerds.
What? Really?
Yeah.
What? Wizards?
Nerds. It's all of it. Even Om Shinrikyo, it's just nerds.
Right.
It's just computer nerds, IT nerds, fucking, like, you know, just nerdy people. They make their own, which we'll post up on the Facebook page. There's some Om Shinrikyo anime and stuff. They've made cartoons.
Yeah.
It's Shoko Asahara's in it, you know, all that kind of stuff. I've got some on my YouTube thing. I'll post them up.
Probably turned into a fairly decent studio if they'd actually put their mind to something.
Yeah, like
positive.
They're not bad, you know, drawing wise, art wise, and stuff.
Mm.
So, yeah, it could have been a thing. But, yeah, they proper went, like, nerd.
Okay.
So he took out an advert in Twilight Zone magazine stating the special powers that could be gained if you joined, also claiming that he could perceive past lives, read minds, pass through walls, and meditate for hours underwater, as well as levitate.
Do you also get a free pair of invisible glasses, which makes everything invisible, makes you invisible?
Yeah, gives you X-ray glasses.
That's it, X-ray glasses.
You don't need them X-ray glasses anyway. You can pass through walls.
I suppose you don't need them.
No.
Just thought it'd been a bonus.
Yeah. It would be better, though, if you were passing through a wall and you had some of those little one lens red and one lens blue 3D glasses. I'd feel way cooler passing through a wall wearing them.
To hit other people?
Just wearing them.
Or you feel cooler because you're looking at things in...
I'd just feel cool wearing them.
One eye red and one eye blue.
Yeah, be good, wouldn't it?
Fair enough.
Space age. They make everything cooler.
I guess.
Come on. Lost my place now. He set up a photograph, and this is what I posted on the Facebook page and on the Instagram page. Set up a photograph, and using a yoga technique, sitting cross-legged, he managed to use his thigh muscles to propel himself into the air. The photograph being taken at a precise moment to make it appear that he was actually levitating.
I wondered at what I saw the picture on Instagram, and I was like,
yeah.
How is he doing that then?
Yeah.
So he just went,
yeah, it's just a thigh propulsion, and propelled himself into the air and told everybody he was doing a levitate.
That's why his face is going,
oh no, why it looks like he's doing a giant poo.
That's so funny. What a con artist.
I know. So this photo appeared in the full story that Twilight Zone magazine eventually did on Chizuru and the Mountain Wizards. And the picture worked, and Chizuru's small apartment was no longer big enough to hold the members, so separate branches began to appear across the country. While Chizuru was meditating on a beach on Japan's Pacific coast, he apparently received a message from God telling him that he had been chosen to lead God's army. So later that year, a man he met in the mountains told him that Armageddon would come at the end of the century, with one godly race surviving, and the leader of which would come from Japan. When Chizuru returned from the mountains, he changed his name to Shoko Asahara and officially declared himself as the End Times Prophet. Their belief system drew upon Asahara's idiosyncratic interpretations of elements of early Indian Buddhism and Tibetan Buddhism, as well as Hinduism, taking Shiva as the main image of worship and incorporating millennialist ideas from Christianity, yoga, and the writings of Nostradamus.
So this fella's saying this is what happened, but he's a con artist, so it didn't actually happen. Actually have some sort of thing, something like, oh, I'm going to change my name, I'm going to do all this stuff now. He said he went out to the mountains and meditated, and this happened. Is that bullshit?
I don't know.
Or did he actually have some thing going on? Like in St. Maud we watched last night, where she has that thing.
Yeah.
Is it actually something happening, or is that bullshit?
Well, yeah, it could be a lot to do with it, couldn't it? The mental illness, you know, I'm sure like a lot of it has elements of that. Everyone we've kind of looked at, you know, is like,
but I'm trying to say
they could be either way, like any of them could just be a fucking con.
Yeah.
Or any of them could be mental illness and fucking religious mania, like in St. Maud.
Yeah.
You know, so what is the truth there? Who knows? You know, some of them we can kind of see. It's quite obvious that it's one or the other.
I was just wondering if he was saying bullshit or not, because obviously he's the way you know this is because he said that. No one else was there to go, oh, I witnessed this, and
but
this is what happened
to him. There's no other side to it.
Yeah, we have no idea.
I could find, so no. I don't so know just, with that it's just one. Some of them you can go, that one's a load of shit. You know, know for a fact that they were doing something else there.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, like fucking thinking back, Children of God, David Berg. You know, when his mum was making out that she had the accident, she broke her back, and she said that she was in bed for 5 years or something, when really she wasn't. She was at college.
Yeah.
You know, she's just telling stories to make herself seem more.
Yeah,
kind of like in God's favour, so people believe her. You know, but who knows, one or the other.
Okay.
So he changed his name. They've got all sorts of different things in there: Christianity, yoga, Hinduism, and Nostradamus. It's a bit of a fucking mixed bag, isn't it? Asahara's supposed mission was to take upon himself the sins of the world. He also claimed he could transfer spiritual power to his followers and ultimately take away their sins and bad deeds. In 1987, Asahara also outlined a doomsday prophecy, which included a third world war instigated by the USA, whom he referred to as the Beast from the Book of Revelation, predicting it would eventually attack Japan. He also insisted the followers must cut ties with family members, allowing Asahara to create the new normal and to have more control. After a trip to visit the Dalai Lama, Asahara wrote and released, and we know that he did go and visit the Dalai Lama. Apparently the people like who were with him, the Dalai Lama, said that he questioned Asahara questioned him about like starting a religious organisation, and so we know that he went to see him.
Okay.
Asahara wrote and released his first book, The Secrets of Developing Your Supernatural Powers. An advert for the book claimed spiritual training that doesn't lead to supernatural powers is hogwash, also promising how to read the future, read people's minds, develop X-ray vision. See, you can have X-ray vision. Take a trip to the fourth dimension, hear the voice of God, and more. There you go. Want to take a trip to the fourth dimension?
Yeah.
After the release of the book, Om Shinrikyo gained many followers. The minimum amount needed to join the cult was $700, with the highest donation amount set at $2,000, though this would also get you 2 gallons of Shoko Asahara's used bath water.
What?
So the highest donation you can give is $2,000, and if you get that, you get a freebie. You get 2 gallons of Shoko Asahara's used bathwater.
That's the top tier. What's the bottom tier?
700.
So just a different amount of his dirty bathwater?
I don't think you get any bathwater for 700.
Oh.
No. You don't deserve it. It's only $700. Come on.
Dirty bathwater?
Yep.
What you could do with it?
Have a bath in it. Drink it. I don't know. Oh, it's made me feel a bit sick, actually. For $7,000, as many as 30 people would take part in a mass ritual known as the Blood Ritual Initiation, where followers would drink 3 spoonfuls of what was supposedly Asahara's blood, which was said to give them magical powers.
Oh, God. You know it's like pig's blood or something.
Yeah, probably.
God.
There was also the Holy Hair Initiation Ritual, where followers would drink tea brewed with Asahara's hair. There you go.
What is going on? Right, I need some prizes. Thinking cap.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's rinsing
them. Is his pubes involved at any point?
Not that I know of, but more than likely.
Asshole hair?
So members could also pay up to $8,000, and you could go and hang out with Asahara and drink tea laced with LSD.
You can hang out with me, drink tea, and we get fucked up.
That's another thing. These guys are tripping. These guys are tripping.
So you got tripping nerds.
These guys are tripping balls
nerds.
At all times. When it gets going, when they start getting going. You know, obviously Asahara's doing the LSD and fucking... But yeah, when they get going, they're all fucking tripping balls. So do remember that all of this shit, which I'm about to get into...
Is while they're tripping.
They're doing while they're tripping balls, which is just fucking insane, honestly, when you see what they're doing.
Okay.
Because they're fucking with biological weapons. They're fucking with, like, loads of shit, and they're tripping at all times. On super, super strong LSD.
That's just bizarre. Why acid? I suppose weed, then they're just going to go, let's play computer games.
Yeah.
Coke, there's two full on.
Yeah, you know, like, I don't know. I suppose it's just personal choice, isn't it?
Like Jim Jones. Sleep.
Jim Jones was doing his whiz, you know, fucking sweet, Charlie Manson. Like, they were doing acid, weren't they? And so obviously, that was 60s and 70s. So.
Yeah, you got that going on, yeah.
You know, but like...
Okay. It's an interesting one.
So, Om Shinrikyo was modelled after the Japanese school system, so it's consistent work and like never questioning the leader or the teacher. In 1988, Om Shinrikyo began construction of their compound in the foothills of Mount Fuji. It was a ramshackle collection of prefab trailers and windowless warehouses, which was constantly filthy and infested with roaches, as Shoko Asahara said that to kill them would accrue bad karma. So they'd never killed cockroaches or rats or anything.
Or too much time and money.
Yeah. Asahara also said there was no bathing and no personal maintenance. I don't know what the reason for that is. He began to charge $2,000 for week-long meditation seminars where participants would sleep on dirt floors and be fed one meal of boiled vegetables a day, commonly called Shoko rations or Om food.
But people were going for it.
Yeah. While casual members could get by with donating a few thousand dollars, those that wanted to join the priesthood were required to give over everything they owned, even down to postage stamps. General members were fed boiled rice, tofu, seaweed or om food twice a day and were permitted 5 hours sleep a night maximum in tiny plywood boxes, with the priesthood only being allowed 3 hours. Asahara instigated karma disposal, which consisted of members being beaten with the supposed effect of the karma they had accrued previously being beaten out of them. He also introduced the concept that the people doing the beating would gain good karma as they were doing a positive thing for the other person. Serious offenders were locked in tiny rooms for days with only a television playing Asahara talking at deafening volume. This punishment had no age limit and children as young as 10 were subjected to it.
Did the kids get given acid?
Yeah, I think so.
Jesus Christ.
I think they did. I don't think I've got anything written down about that, but I think they possibly did.
How does anybody think this is a good use of their money?
I don't know, but they, like we'll see with a lot of the cults, you know, these were families. These were families with children willingly going into this, you know, it's crazy. Om's public relations activities included publishing comics and animated cartoons that attempted to tie its religious beliefs to popular anime and manga themes, including space missions, powerful weapons, world conspiracies, and the quest for the ultimate truth. I will post some of those on the Facebook page because they're quite interesting to see.
Okay.
Asahara introduced the use of a headset known as the Perfect Salvation Initiation, which was designed to transmit his brainwaves to the wearer, also delivering a 6-volt shock to the brain every few seconds, with the children's headset delivering a 3-volt shock. I posted a picture of that of him wearing the headset thing. It's weird, just got wires sticking in it. But yeah, no, to electric shocks to brains. It's not good. Doesn't work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good combination.
No.
Members of the priesthood received their headset free of charge, but other members were expected to rent theirs and you had to have one. And that cost them $7,000 a month. So,
what the fuck?
I know. So he's fucking selling his bathwater. He's selling his tea made out of his hair. He's selling these fucking dodgy headsets that give you electric shocks to your brain.
But these people are coming back.
Yeah.
So they must feel like something's happening for them.
Yeah.
This is
well,
this
they
is,
all do, don't they? But then it gets to that point, you know, obviously you've bought into it so far. You imagine, like with all of them.
Oh yeah,
you've gone so far,
like
everything.
Tom Cruise in Scientology.
Yeah, you've given up everything. You can't then go back on yourself and go, "I was wrong."
But also, like I said with Tom Cruise before and stuff, and any of these people, they're looking for something in life, and they find something. At the same time, not that it's right abusing people or anything in these cults. Like you're going to hit that person, tie them up, whatever. If they're happy, they've succeeded in what they wanted as an individual person. Obviously, there's rights and wrong in life, and there's we have the police and et cetera, and court system and prisons.
I know what you mean, but
do you know what I'm saying? That they are getting
on the
what
surface
they
of it, they've
kind
found
of
what
want.
They're looking
they
for. They've found their place.
There is that, and that's no way am I siding with these cult leaders and saying that that's right in what they're doing.
Yeah,
they
because
are
their
making
place
happiness
is being
for
taken
these people.
Advantage
if they're coming
of.
Back again, they are. If legitimately they are and they feel okay with it. I know, and I say that Jim Jones, it spiraled downwards. So they were to the point where, like, actually, this is going bad. This isn't the nirvana I thought it was.
Yeah.
But these other people, like, here from the get-go, doing the meditation courses for a week, blah, 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 they're getting what they want. If they're getting their satisfaction, their happiness, I know what they're doing is wrong. He is giving what they want, though. They're getting the happiness. I think everyone knows what I'm trying to get out of here.
I do know. Yeah, I do know what you mean.
But no way do I say
it's just obvious,
fine to do
obviously
that.
Their happiness is then being...
It's been abused.
It's been
used.
Abused and taken advantage of by someone else like for their Manson. Gain. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. I just popped in my head, you know.
Yeah.
I can imagine like a cult leader in court saying that.
Yeah. And going, well, it was what they wanted.
Gave them their happiness, didn't I?
Yeah, it was what they wanted, you know. Yeah, I suppose. Okay, so the greatest sin a member could commit was wanting to leave the cult, and they were thought to be confused and in need of guidance. So usually a punishment for this, they were hung upside down and had their heads dunked in ice-cold water, which was said to remove heat that was interfering with their thinking. And, of course, it wasn't long before someone ended up dying.
They're also a bit thick as well.
Then. Yeah. One member contracted hypothermia after the punishment and he ended up dying. One of his friends got pissed off about that and demanded that he leave the cult. He wanted to go to leave the cult, speak to the police. But he was strangled to death by four other followers. His body was then stuffed into an oil drum and set on fire.
Right. Red flags. Red flags. If you're in that cult, like... Red flags.
Yeah.
Thought I was just meditating for a week.
Why
is Brian on fire in a fucking canister over there?
Yeah. Apparently it took ages for him to strangle this dude as well, because you think they're already...
Hands are stronger. You have a go then.
Like, this will probably be like his closest members. So they're allowed about 3 hours sleep a night. You know, they're already living on like fuck all food.
And
like,
acid.
Tofu's nice, but you're going to need more than tofu and rice, like,
There's no sustainability to this.
Plus,
this
you're on acid.
Thing. This game plan.
Plus, you've been drinking dirty bath water, so I fucking
and
hell.
Pig's blood.
Yeah. And you've got nothing, you know, you've got nothing left. You've got no money already, you know, as soon as you're into this.
They're not thinking, the pupils, I shall say, the cult members, they are not thinking long term in this. The cult leader, he knows what's going on.
Or does he?
Or does he?
He's fucking tripping balls.
Mm.
So, yeah. The cult started to attract controversy in the late 1980s with accusations of deception of recruits, holding members against their will, forcing members to donate, and the murder of the member who wanted to leave. In October 1989, an anti-cult lawyer... Susumi Sakamoto, I do apologise as well, I'm probably going to fuck up loads of names in this episode because it's Japanese and bloody French Canadian, so yeah, I'm apologising now. So he threatened the cult with a lawsuit that would potentially bankrupt the group. He recorded an interview for a Japanese talk show discussing the group as well. The following month, Sakamoto, his wife, and their one-year-old son were murdered by OM members, stuffed into oil drums, and dropped off in different districts. So that's a good old favourite of Asahara's as well. He likes putting people in oil drums.
Barry, John, Fred, Frank.
OM Shinrikyo began to attempt production of biochemical weapons, remember, all with a head full of acid as well, and started to produce the botulinus toxin.
What for?
And the only thing apparently more toxic than that is plutonium.
Jesus Christ.
Oh no, it's fucking insane. Because he wanted to do biological warfare.
Yeah, what is the plan?
So the thing is, right, so he's saying that there's going to be a third world war, right?
He's leading the
only tribe that will survive, like that dude told him in the mountains. He's going to be the leader of the only tribe that survives Armageddon. Right, so he's saying that the USA are the beast from the Book of Revelation, so they're going to eventually start a third world war and they're going to attack Japan. So Asahara he's trying to initiate an attack that will be blamed on America, so that he's trying to bring doomsday forward by doing this attack and blaming it on America.
Like Charlie Manson... the black communities.
Yeah, blaming it on people of colour starting the race war.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've got to try and bring the prophecy forward, haven't they, a lot of times. So.
All right. Hitler was essentially a cult leader.
Yeah, that was a cult.
Yeah.
I'd say.
Nazis.
Yep.
You know, one day we'll probably have to do a Nazi episode.
I'd be really interested to do a Nazi episode. Because I find it absolutely insane that all the things they could do, and obviously they were off their tits on fucking shit all the time. Hitler was on crack all the time, weren't he?
Do you know what I mean? I'd like to do that episode and probably not go into the the tortured, because you don't need to so much. You can say, oh, they experimented on, because the whole Nazi thing's so massive. The whole cult thing, Adolf being really into the cult.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think that comes into it so much, though, that it's not really a thing that you could skip. There was so much medical experiments and stuff like that. Have you ever heard of the Japanese thing, Unit 731?
Is that the freezing, put your hands in freezing cold water?
Yeah, and they were giving them syphilis and shit just to see what would happen. And fuck it. I've got the movie of it on my laptop, actually, if you want to watch it.
No, not really.
Men Behind the Sun. I'm going to watch it. Yeah, I've heard it's really quite bad, but I'm going to watch it. Yeah. Men Behind the Sun.
That's a Sunday morning wake up in bed with your coffee.
Japanese fucking war torture and
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so... Om Shinriko. It's fine. Began to produce botulinus and botulinus toxin. It shuts down the central nervous system, the heart and the lungs and stuff, and can be preceded by 36 hours of vomiting and diarrhea. So by April 1990, they had a fully working bio lab producing the toxin. So, and as well, like, these aren't chemists and stuff that have kind of gone into this cult. Remember, like, they are nerds. They're like computer nerds, fucking that kind of shit. They taught themselves. They were teaching themselves chemistry and fucking all this shit. They didn't know this. So, yeah, it's crazy. It just goes to show, like, I think the Japanese are some of the most highly motivated people in the fucking world, aren't they? Like, if they want to do something...
It's the working ethics, I guess,
yeah.
I got that shitting for that long. I got a friend who once got Wells disease. He's drinking, he's coming back from
that
party.
The rat thing?
Yeah, he's coming back from party and he's fucked out of his face. He drank a bottle of vodka and he's walking back from miles to his party. Oh. He ended up getting picked up by his brother, just happened to be driving by. Like, what the fuck was he said his name then? I won't say his name.
No.
What the fuck's he doing over there? And he was so thirsty, he drank out of a pump, drank out of a river.
Oh, fuck.
Got Wells disease and had the shits for 48 hours, non-stop.
Eek. Oh, my God. Oh, that was horrible. Luckily, I never had anything like that, but I imagine it's fucking awful. They plan to fit a spraying mechanism to the exhaust of a car driving around Japan's Capitol building, killing hundreds, if not thousands, of people, and starting World War III. This and another attempt failed as the scientists couldn't work out how to weaponise the toxin. Because apparently you have to do it differently. Like, obviously it's not going to spread so far if it's in wet form. You have to make it into dry form. I don't understand the whole thing of it. But yeah, that's apparently how you would weaponise it. So it would originally be in wet form. But because you can't go around spraying... that and it's not going to travel, you need to turn it into dry form, so it's probably like airborne, you know, it would be easier to spread like that, but they couldn't work out how to weaponize it, so that one failed. So by 1991 the cult had 7,000 members due to their enormous propaganda machine, and that was all the anime and kind of the comic books and stuff like that. Around this time Asahara also announced that he was the reincarnation of Jesus. Conditions in the compound.
Jesus?
Yeah.
What,
he's
Jesus?
Dragging Jesus into it as well now. What? I don't know.
Christianity?
Well, yeah, but he was pulling elements from Christianity in the first place, wasn't he?
It's a strange one to go to.
I know, but he pulled elements from everything. Like we were saying, Nostradamus, yoga, Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism. You know, he's got Shiva, who's typically a Hindu.
Yeah.
Deity.
Bizarre.
You know, so he's kind of dragged that in as well.
Yeah.
So it's all a bit like mishmash, but now he's pulling Jesus into it. Conditions in the compound were terrible, with it being described by one member...
I didn't think it probably got better.
No. Described by one member as a cross between a canning factory and a concentration camp. Around 100 children lived at the compound, separated from their parents, sick, malnourished and almost feral. Asahara's third daughter, Reiko, ruled over the children, and she was just as bad as Asahara, once burning another child with three different kinds of acid just to see what would happen. by the end of 1994. Well, that's what most of them are like, isn't it? It's like with the Nazis, with their experiments. They'd do that shit just to see what would happen.
Yeah, yeah, Mengele. Yeah.
I think they he fucking sewed twins together once, didn't he? Just to see what would happen. And it's fucking injected dye into their eyes and stuff. It's fucking crazy. That's what I mean. I'd like to go into that. You know, it's
I think really
it doesn't get like looked at so much, those elements of it, you know.
I like everything surrounding it as well.
I'd like to go into the drugs
as
thing.
As a military thing.
The drugs
well,
thing with the Nazis. Unit. And then also we could obviously get into like Hitler and the occult.
Yeah, yeah.
Hitler and the fucking like and alien technology and stuff that, you know, so much. That would be like fucking five part or something. That'd be huge. By the end of 1994, Asahara had infiltrated the police, the government, and even had newspaper editors and program directors, as well as 40 active members of the military among their ranks. He really got in with the Yakuza as well in Japan. It's really just crazy. He's getting in with everybody. So, so mental. Like all good cult leaders, Shoko Asahara had a stonking drug habit, and like we were saying, he was on LSD like pretty much all the time. During the LSD initiations, Asahara would make members wear nappies because the dosage was so strong they'd just be tripping balls for fucking ages and wouldn't even think to go to the toilet.
But you know the reason that happens, because he's experienced before people shitting everywhere.
Yeah.
Right, no more shitting everywhere. Yeah. Everyone's in nappies.
But apparently he used to keep the nappies as well because he thought, like, obviously he's paranoid as well. He used to think that if they found the nappies, like the police found the nappies, they'd test the shit and find all the drugs.
Right.
So he used to keep all the nappies as well, yeah.
Oh my God. So, this place just sounds fucking terrible.
Soon the cult's lab began producing their own LSD, and wasn't long before all the members were walking around with a head full of acid. So they're all doing it now because they're on the ball with that.
Right.
Obviously, they're working with chemical weapons as well, and there was quite a few industrial accidents because acid and chemical weapons don't mix either. As the cult were trying to avoid attracting attention, they decided to incinerate the bodies themselves and scattered the ashes at the bottom of Mount Fuji. So, yeah, anyone that died, they'd just burn them. I think he invented, like, some massive incinerator with sand at the bottom of it as well to, like, specifically burn the bodies.
Lovely.
Asahara told his followers that the reason they were ill and so many were dying is the USA were regularly spraying the compound with biochemical weapons, causing paranoia and unrest. It wasn't because he was working them like all hours of the day, not feeding them, no sleep, everyone's tripping balls, fucking no one's washing, everyone's got diseases and shit.
Sounds fucking horrible.
It was because of America.
Yeah.
The compound was also constantly besieged by families attempting to rescue members, press and police. Asahara decided it was time to arm themselves, and having millions of dollars in the bank, they did this easily. After they bought out a failing ironworks, they began manufacturing AK-47s from scratch. Asahara began to look to other countries, as what he really wanted was a nuclear weapon. Russia gave Asahara that chance as it was collapsing at the end of 1991. Asahara began to infiltrate the country and found it easy to assimilate as the school and social system there was similar. Asahara's ulterior motive was to recruit Russia's rogue scientists and their knowledge of chemical and nuclear weapons. By the end of 1994, Om Shinrikyo had 30,000 members in the Soviet Union. Om Shinrikyo paid $700,000 for an Mi-17 military attack helicopter, sending members to Florida to learn how to fly it. Weirdly enough, the same place as the guys who did the 9/11 attack.
I was
going
to say that, yeah.
The main goal for the helicopter was to fit it with a mechanism that would allow them to spray poison gas over Tokyo. They also returned from Russia with the recipe for sarin gas, originally created by the Nazis. So exposure to sarin is lethal, even at very low concentrations, and death can occur in 1 to 10 minutes after inhalation, unless antidotes are quickly administered. Initial symptoms are a runny nose, tightness in the chest, and blindness due to pupil constriction. Soon after, the victim will have difficulty breathing and experience nausea and drooling. As they continue to lose control of bodily functions, they may vomit, defecate, and urinate. This phase is followed by twitching and jerking, with the person ultimately becoming comatose and suffocating through a series of convulsive spasms. Sarin has a high volatility, so that's the ease with which a liquid turns to vapour. Therefore, it's easily inhaled and may immediately penetrate the skin. A person's clothing can release sarin for about 30 minutes after exposure. Om's plan was to mimic a biblical disaster or to have the USA blamed for the attack. So a 500-pound sarin bomb could possibly wipe out almost a quarter of the UK, and Om were planning to drop 70 tonnes on Tokyo. To test the sarin, Om travelled to Australia, which is... I don't know why. That fucking seems like quite a way to go.
To test?
To just do this, yeah.
They've looked and go, what's the closest country which is large enough, and I suppose
that's like not as inhabited, is it?
Yeah,
so no one's really going to find out, I suppose.
Yeah.
So they travelled to Australia, they bought a ranch and acquired 29 sheep, which they tethered to the ground, exposing them to the sarin gas they had produced. All 29 sheep died. The cult had successfully produced a biological weapon.
How did they get their weapons into Australia?
I do not know. I don't know.
Just even take them there would have been dangerous as fuck.
Yeah.
Must have been like...
didn't even consider that, actually, but yeah.
They wouldn't have taken a helicopter there. It would have been a plane.
Got a private plane or something.
Because
remember, he's fucking loaded.
Yeah.
This dude's got so much money from all these people.
And just travelling with it, like...
I didn't even think about that.
Not tell the pilots, then the pilots had to just go on it without knowing that they had this stuff, which could at any point, if say the aeroplane crashed into a city, it's released.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Crazy. Yeah, I didn't even consider it.
Mm.
So on the night of June 27th, 1994, the cult carried out a chemical weapons attack against civilians when they released sarin in the centre of Matsumoto. With the help of a converted refrigerator truck, members of the cult released a cloud of sarin intended to float near the homes of judges who were overseeing a lawsuit concerning a real estate dispute which was predicted to go against the cult. The attack killed 8 and harmed over 150 more.
Shit.
I know.
Surely the cult members here are going like, hang on, the reason we got this stuff is because of the Americans, blah, blah, blah. But now we're just attacking people who are going to... And his thing would be, yeah, but they're going to shut us down. So the only way we could do it is if we just kill them. Like, well, surely then that case is going to go to the next people who are going to take on the case.
Yeah, you'd think so.
It's such dumb logic.
Yeah. Asahara decided to start training ground troops and created the Soldiers of White Love. And they trained from 8 in the morning till midnight every day. The Soldiers of White Love were tasked with seizing the government after the sarin attack so that Asahara could be placed as the head monk. And he wanted monks in all the different kind of countries, but he was going to be like head monk of the world type thing.
Head monk.
Yeah.
I love it. The Army of the White Love.
Army of White Love, yeah.
That sounds like an all right army.
I know.
Army of White Love. Innocent Sex.
What was Jim Jones? This was something similar, weren't it? Army...
Was it Army?
Red Knights or something? I don't know.
Knows.
Can't remember. I'll have to look in my box. My Jim Jones box is back in there now. Asahara also claimed to have laser, solar and plasma weapons in development. By the end of 1994, Om Shinrikyo would have over 40,000 followers... in 30 branches over 6 countries. Their weapons stockpile had reached supervillain proportions, and the connections that they had made even extended to the Yakuza, who are obviously into like everything in Japan. So yeah, he's got involved in that. In 1995, a massive earthquake hit Kobe in Japan, killing 5,500 people in 15 seconds. Asahara used this as a sign for the beginning of the apocalypse. In February 1995, several cult members kidnapped Kiyoshi Kariya, a 69-year-old brother of a member who had left after being pressured to sell her property by the cult. They took him from a Tokyo street to the compound near Mount Fuji. He was accidentally killed during the kidnapping, and his corpse was destroyed in one of the group's incinerators. Before Kariya was abducted, he had been receiving threatening phone calls demanding to know the whereabouts of his sister, and he had left a note saying, "If I disappear, I was abducted by Om Shinrikyo."
Fuck.
Predictable fucking... predictable cult.
You know when a dude got a short accent, was it like John Travolta and Marv in Pulp Fiction? You can imagine, can't you?
Yeah. Fingerprint evidence for an OM member linked to the kidnapping, in addition to sarin contaminated soil samples, caused the police to set a raid date for March the 22nd. Asahara was made aware of the impending raid by two cult members inside the self-defense forces and ordered an attack on the Tokyo subway lines close to the Metropolitan Police Department on the morning of March the 20th in an effort to distract the police from the raid. Shoko Asahara had other plans before this, including cutting the police station in half with a giant laser and spraying Tokyo with LSD from the helicopter.
Was King Kong, Godzilla coming out as well? Like, fucking cut. Right, get a laser.
Oh, no.
It's such a fucking evil mastermind from a fucking comedy, from a, like a Disney movie.
Well,
or
this is what I'm saying. Like,
get
you
a big
know,
laser
guys,
and cut the prison, police station off.
These guys are just like manga nerds. And anime nerds. So it's a proper, like, comic book kind of supervillainy thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It sounds like a comic book villain.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so they were going to either cut it in half with a giant laser or they were going to spray Tokyo with LSD. Can you imagine that? That's fucking insane.
Yeah.
Everyone in Tokyo tripping. Insane. Oh, my God. But yeah, they couldn't even get the helicopter off the ground because they were just on acid all the time. Can't even drive the helicopter.
Please, can I just, for the day, Wednesday morning, we'll be a bird in a tree just watching these fucking people
can
tripping balls going... pull the lever! Pull the lever! I'm fucking... There's about eight helicopters I think I'm flying. You're flying one! One! Pull it!
That'd be awful. Oh, flying a helicopter on acid.
Fucking hell.
That's bonkers, isn't it? Okay.
At least if you're stoned, you wouldn't even fuck. I'm not fucking doing this. And
yeah. At least you're kind of mostly there, like fucking. You couldn't even compute, I don't think, on acid. Driving or flying
helicopters.
Don't recommend that at all.
It's probably not something that goes with the guidelines of taking acid.
The cult's chemist was ordered to produce more sarin, but due to the lack of time available, the sarin produced was of a lower quality to the previous attempts. On the morning of the 20th of March, five members launched the attack on one of the world's busiest transport systems at the peak of morning rush hour. The sarin was contained in plastic bags, then wrapped in newspaper, and the members also carried umbrellas with sharpened tips in order to puncture the bags. They were designated separate subway lines, and at pre-arranged stations, the sarin packets would be dropped and punctured. There was a really good documentary on YouTube about this, actually. I'll have to post the link on the Facebook page. It kind of goes into detail and gives you like a little reenact thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite interesting.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm going to fuck these names up here. On the Marunouchi line, two packets were dropped and both successfully punctured, releasing all the sarin. 14 stops later, two severely injured passengers were carried from the train while the station attendant removed the sarin packets. The train continued, with sarin still on the floor of the third car. After seven stops, the train was finally taken out of service after the death of one passenger and 358 people were seriously injured.
Wow.
That's only on one train.
What are the symptoms of the seriously injured? Is it vomiting or stuff?
It's being sick, it's runny nose, it's not being able to see, it's not being able to breathe.
A general subway car or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, just going along, you're going to daily work, daily commute.
That's it.
And someone starts coughing Like in a zombie movie.
Yeah.
Someone starts coughing, then someone else starts coughing, and then all of a sudden someone pukes. You're like, oh God, that's disgusting. And all of a sudden someone else pukes. You must be fucking like, oh shit.
Yeah, but you need to remember as well, this is Japan. And people are going to work, you know, and they are not missing work. People in Japan do not miss work. They're so work motivated. It was saying, like, in the documentary...
England,
it was saying in the documentary, like, these people went to work, and some of these people that had been on the train, like I said earlier,
the sarin
releases off your clothes for, like, half hour. So, yeah, they've gone into work. Oh, fucking hell, you know, guess what I saw on the train this morning? But, yeah, they're fucking releasing sarin all over the workplace as well. So it's crazy. They still went to work. You know, it's only the people who were really fucking
This one attack has spread far fast.
Yeah, but this isn't what he wanted. This isn't what Asahara wanted. He wanted to kill like 500,000 people.
Why?
So on his scale, this was a major fail.
This is in Tokyo.
No, he wants to initiate World War III by getting this attack blamed on America.
Sorry, I keep fucking missing that one point. Yes.
So he wants it blamed on America.
That's why he's doing it. So, but sure, it's like, hang on though, we're trying to kill a lot of our own people just to make a point, which is just ridiculous, because the whole reason the attack is a bad thing in the first place is because they killed loads of our people. But we're doing that and then blame it on some people who aren't specifically motivated at that moment in time, if they're going to be or whatever, to do that attack on us anyway. So it's almost very, very at any moment could fail. Even if they tried to go ahead and blame it on that, it could fail at any point with the opposing government saying, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
So what proof do you have we did that? We don't have that. So it's such a ludicrous ideological thing to try and do. It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just... And everyone going along with it, but I see what you mean. They've already spent their money and they got a head full of acid.
Yeah. So, on another train, on the same line, another member, because there was four or five different guys, I think it was, on different lines. So, they've got two packets each, and one guy's got three.
Okay.
So, on another train on the same line, another member dropped another two sarin packets but didn't fully puncture them both, resulting in the sarin being released slowly. The train was taken out of service 1 hour and 40 minutes after the packet was punctured, resulting in no fatalities but over 200 people in a serious condition. On the Hibaya line, another member dropped another two packets, puncturing both packets and exiting the train in under 2 minutes. This attack killed one person and seriously injured 532 others. Another member boarded a different train with three packets, two of which he managed to puncture. One passenger noticed the liquid soap package on the train floor and kicked it out. When the train stopped at a station. As a result, four people at the station died.
Shit.
Oh, yeah. I think that might be the same one. I think it was a couple of the guys that worked at the station, because the dude had kicked the packet out of the train when the doors had opened and it was on the station. The dudes just fucking picked it up and like took it to their office. So a dude who picked it up, not knowing what it was, and put it in his office, he died. And then there was another guy who was with him. I think I'm not sure if he died or if he just got really fucking ill. But yeah, crazy.
At this point, though, hospitals are starting to get full up.
I'm just about to get onto that.
Onto a very large scale. And straight away, someone of the police or authorities is going to be like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah, I do remember this happening. It was fucking chaos. I remember seeing it on the news.
Really?
Do you not?
No.
Yeah, I remember most of these happening, like fucking Waco, Heaven's Gate, this one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I remember this, seeing it on the news. Fucking chaos.
I have to check out some old news reports from it.
Yeah, do. It's really, really interesting.
Just to see at that moment how it was developing as a story.
Yeah.
As in, like, the information. Be really interesting, actually. Because obviously they didn't have any information. But, like, loads of people have been seriously injured, blah, blah, blah. We're not sure why.
Because they didn't know what it was at first, you know.
Yeah. That's when you got to get some intelligence in there.
Yeah, I think they did. I think it was one guy who'd been in the military and he kind of went, oh, this looks like fucking sarin gas.
Well, that's good then that person was there.
But yeah, the documentary that I watched on YouTube is really interesting because it goes into this actual bit, so it goes into it in more detail. Because like, I think one of the dudes who took one of the packages, I think he was initially a doctor. He used to be a doctor, you know, so when he's sitting on the train, he's kind of having a moment looking round him going, fucking hell, you know, I used to help people. Now here I am, I'm going to fucking kill all these people. You know, this woman sitting over there, that guy over there, you know, if I do this, they're going to die. So, you know, it's quite interesting. It goes into, like, their thinking behind it as well in that moment, you know, and what they actually did.
Crazy.
Yeah. So on the day of the attack, ambulances transported 688 patients and nearly 5,000 reached hospitals by other means. In total, 278 hospitals saw 5,510 patients, and one of the most traumatic injuries, this is fucking awful, this poor woman, was a woman whose contact lenses had been fused to her eyes by the gas, and she had to have her eyeballs surgically removed. Fuck that.
The pain.
Fuck that shit. That's so fucking horrible.
And the worst of all this is, really, when it comes down to it, is like, as soon as the intelligence is there to go, this is what this is, then it's like, fuck, this is really bad, because this is just individuals who we have no idea. It could be anybody, look like anybody, even if you've got CCTV footage on people and we start studying cameras, we don't know the route. So
you don't know,
and
who
it
could
be any person,
at, really.
Anybody can do it and release this.
Because when they did it,
that's fucking scary to know, like, we don't know how to stop this. This is fucking, this is like some mentalist group doing this. And I'd be interested to figure out how they...
Well, they don't know, because, like, fucking the dudes, like, they've got on the train. Obviously, he did the shit with the packages. And then they just got off the train. They had getaway drivers as well waiting for them. So
I guess
get off
it's
at
looking
a pre-arranged
back at footage.
Stop.
I guess look about CCTV footage and see and try and then pinpoint down these people. Figure out who these people are and what who they belong to. Oh, my God. It sounds
crazy,
like an absolute nightmare.
2 days after the attack, the police conducted a raid on the compound, discovering cyanide, because they already had a raid planned, didn't they?
So the police knew 2 days after to say, figured out. Do you know how they figured it out?
No. Well, they already had a raid planned on the compound, didn't they? Because
that's why he brought this forward, this attack, a little bit,
because he knew of the raid. So he wanted this to happen so that then the police would be distracted from the raid on the compound. That's why he did the Tokyo subway. So the police already had the raid planned.
Right.
Because they'd already had suspicions. They'd been told by other people, you know, members that might have escaped and stuff like that, that there was shit going on there.
Okay.
So 2 days after the attack, the police conducted the raid on the compound, discovering cyanide, hydrochloric acid, chloroform and everything needed to produce sarin. $7.9 million, £22 of gold, and thousands of emaciated followers. They also found 80 burnt metal drums, so they've killed at least 80 people, because remember that was the way they used to dispose of people, was put them in the drums and burn them. So they've killed at least 80 people, or at least 80 people have died on the compound, maybe through, like, fucking not getting enough to eat, you know, overwork and that kind of shit. Obviously the accidents between tripping balls and chemical weapons. Shortly after the attack as well, OM lost its status as a religious organisation and their assets were seized. Asahara was sentenced to death by hanging on the 27th of February 2004, and after many appeals and postponements, on the 6th of July 2018, the Ministry of Justice announced that Asahara had been executed that morning, along with 6 others of those principally involved. On the 27th of November 2004, all the OM trials were concluded. As a result, among a total of 189 members indicted, 13 were sentenced to death, 5 were sentenced to life in prison, 80 were given prison sentences of various lengths, 87 received suspended sentences, 2 were fined, and 1 was found not guilty. Now, in 2007, OM Shinrikyo split into Aleph and Hikari no Wa, which is the Circle of Rainbow Light. The Public Security Intelligence Agency considered them to be branches of a dangerous terrorist organisation, and both groups have been kept under surveillance, with the Tokyo High Court stating that there are no major changes between Om Shinrikyo and Hikari No Wa.
Right, okay.
So there you go.
Executed then.
Om Shinrikyo and Shoko Asahara got hung. Well, would have gone to the government, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess. Paid. And probably paid. Yeah. Fuck.
That's that one. So they did the salmon gas attack.
So that whole build up, then just doing that whole thing is just that. If they'd actually achieved what they wanted, that'd have been so bad.
Yeah, totally.
But the thing is, though, they wouldn't have got away with it. The intelligence would come along and said, "Look, we know you guys did this." It's just such a foolish.
But his thinking, do you know what I mean? His thinking behind it is huge. He's got such aspirations for that. You know, he was like...
People, and it's obviously, good, listeners, it's good to think big.
Yeah.
Not if you're in a cult and it's killing people.
But obviously, like, with that one as well, I've just kind of skirted that. You know, that is not...
Well, yeah, that towards that end bit there. Yeah, that can...
That is not... You know. There's so much more to that. But we'd be here for fucking ages, you know. But yeah, if you want to look into it, do look into it. It's really fucking interesting, you know. Just his thinking behind it and the person that he was and like...
And poor lady's fused eyeballs.
Yeah, I know. Started off with mountain wizards and fucking descended into like some sort of supervillain craziness.
Trying to laser police stations.
Yeah, cutting places in half with a laser and fucking helicopters full of acid and... God knows what. It's fucking crazy.
Frank and Bob in canisters on fire.
Yeah. Burning people in oil drums.
Oh, so there you go. There's that one, guys. And for our last one of part three, so the last time we're talking cults at this present time.
This is the last one.
And this is a French-Canadian, is it?
Yeah, this one.
So it was more set in the woodlands.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. This one's kind of like, I didn't know anything about this one, to be honest. I was quite, like, it's quite a new one on me. I'm probably going to fuck up a lot of names as well because it's French Canadian. So apologies to any French Canadian people.
Put a little chien on it as well.
Okay, so yeah, a bit of a warning on this one. If you're not a fan of, not that anyone's a fan of surgery. How can you be a fan of surgery? That's ridiculous. Well, I don't know. I bet there is some
guaranteed. There's fans of surgery, and also people get off on surgery.
God, I am not that person.
Surgery porn.
Oh God, that's bad.
It's the first time I've ever said them words
together. Oh no. Come back from their brain. Don't go there. So yeah, this one's Rock Terrio and the Ant Hill Kids.
You what?
Rock Terrio. And the Ant Hill Kids.
Sounds like this is Rock Terrio and the Ant Hill Kids have coming at you, number one.
I know.
Their new single, Coldestism. I don't know what that word was.
Backwards Castration.
That's the new single. There you go.
Okay, so Rock Terrio was a Canadian cult leader who led the small religious group, the Ant Hill Kids, in Burnt River, Ontario, between 1977 and 1989. So he was the second of seven kids, born on May the 16th, 1947, in Saguenay, Quebec, Canada, to a French-Canadian family, and raised in an asbestos mining town called Thetford Mines.
Quebec, yes.
Quebec. Rock's mother, Pierre, was fairly normal, but his father, Hyacinth, was really highly religious and was a member of an authoritarian fascist group of Catholics, however that works.
I want to be called Rock from now.
Known as the White Berets.
Can you call me Rock from now?
Rock. Rock.
Rock. Yeah, I'm Rock. What's your name? Rock. I like that.
When Rock was small, his father would take all the children door to door to collect donations, which he hated, and this instilled a deep hatred for the Catholic religion. Rock claimed that his father beat him mercilessly throughout his childhood, claiming that his father would push him down the stairs and lock him in the cellar, though people that knew the family said that all the kids seemed healthy and happy, apart from Rock. So we don't know if that's true. It's speculation. You know, cult leaders are known to bullshit, so... Mm. He regularly stole money and cigarettes from his parents and blamed it on his siblings, though in a memoir he wrote in later life, he stated that he had infantile paralysis until the age of 6, was unable to talk until the age of 8, and couldn't walk properly until he was 12. So he's got some bullshit going.
As the excuse is being lazy.
Yeah.
Wash my ass!
As a child, Rock was considered to be very intelligent, but dropped out of school in 8th grade, which to us people in the UK is around 13 or 14 years old. As he grew older, he was described as charismatic and charming and had no problem finding a wife. In 1967, he met Francine Grenier at a dance hall, married soon after, and built a home close to his parents. They had 2 children, and Rock got a job with the local fire station performing inspections. In 1971, he began suffering from duodenal ulcers and had to have surgery to remove part of his stomach. When he needed a second operation, he began studying medical books, and by the time the surgery was due, he knew every single step in the operation.
Oh no!
After the second operation, Rock began having stomach cramps and vomiting, and after going back to the doctor, he found out that he was suffering from something called dumping syndrome. And this happens when the severing of gastric nerves prevents your stomach from contracting during digestion. So it remains, like, whatever you put in there remains in a solid lump. So your body can't get any...
So you poop out a whole sausage.
...any nutrients from it or anything. And apparently it moves really rapidly from your stomach to your intestine. It really hurts. Sounds awful.
Sounds fucking terrible.
Rock had always been an attention seeker, but after the surgery and the pain of the resulting complications, he became a hypochondriac, telling everyone that his insides were made of plastic and he was convinced that he had cancer. He also became more reckless, quitting his job at the fire department to sell homemade beer mugs at swap meets and bars. His attitude towards sex changed too, and in the beginning of his marriage, he had asked his wife to wear ankle-length dresses, but after the surgery, he began to ask her to wear shorter skirts and even asked his in-laws if he could open a nudist colony on their land, which they refused.
Your in-laws?
Yeah.
You know, you've got a big back garden. Yeah. And you're now married to your daughter. Yeah. Well, forget all that, but I like the fact that you've got this big garden. Can I open a nudist colony? No. Go back to my daughter and be a husband to her.
So just
you're not opening a nudist colony in my garden.
It's just gone from like...
That's absolutely insane. So there must be like something happening going on with this. Must have really like been ill, had to spend a lot of time in some dark places.
Yeah.
And death possibly came up in his head. And that's why he's just like, nah, fuck it, I'm going to live my life now.
Yeah, I think that's probably
whole, like,
it.
That's a whole, like, come on, fucking show us a bit of leg.
Yeah, I think that's probably it, isn't it? That he's just kind of gone.
I think so.
So, Rock joined the Catholic organisation, the Aramis Club, and was soon put in charge of the initiation rituals for new members. They dropped out soon after and began replacing painkillers with heavy drinking. One night, while selling beer mugs in the bar at the local Holiday Inn, Rock met Giselle Tremblay, a local woman who had moved in with her sister after some bad relationships. Although she was currently dating a guy named Dave, she instantly fell for Rock's charm and charisma. And one evening, Giselle asked Rock if he was married, and bursting into tears, he told her yes, but his wife was sleeping with other men and that he also had cancer. She fell for his story and quit her job to spend the summer selling beer mugs with Rock. Rock eventually abandoned his first wife and Giselle moved in with him. He became obsessed with religion and reading the Bible, announcing that he had found revelations in the Old Testament regarding the role of women and their place as subservient to men, and converted to the Seventh-day Adventist Church, believing that Judgment Day was coming. Rock joined a new group in the town of Thetford Mines to do with the Seventh-day Adventists, which consisted of 6 members, including himself, and headed by a guy named Pastor Zeta. He quit drinking and smoking and became vegetarian. It wasn't long before it became obvious that Rock was very good at recruiting and was given more of a leadership role by Pastor Zeta. Rock's girlfriend was also baptised into the religion, and Pastor Zita gave Rock more responsibility by putting him in charge of one of their stop smoking groups. He travelled north and recruited four teenagers who moved in with him and Giselle in Thetford Mines. In around 6 months, Rock had built a following of six women and two men, and most of them were living full-time in the apartment that he shared with Giselle. Needless to say, she wasn't impressed, as Rock had put her in charge of all the cooking and cleaning, while he and his followers focused on Bible study and group massages. So Rock's in about in his early 30s.
That's what, like, six women and three men.
Yeah.
Okay.
When she voiced her concerns, Rock told her it was God's will that she open her home to these people, and he continued to collect followers. Rock had been enjoying the attention, but some of his followers were still quite young. They were about to return to school after spending their holiday with what they thought was just a guru, you know. In 1978, in an effort to keep his followers, Rock began to increase the stop smoking clinics and throw in vegetarian banquets. He also told them that as Judgment Day was approaching, there was really no point in studying for school. The members who were already in Rock's grip relented and stayed. Some parents tried to convince their children to leave to no avail. It was around this time that Rock began to realise that the apartment was too small, and using the knowledge that isolation is control, he moved the group to Saint Marie in Quebec, where they opened the Healthy Living Clinic under the Seventh-day Adventist banner. He began to make the followers dress in drab green and beige tunics, removing their individuality, and members quit their jobs and schools, sold everything they had, and totally devoted themselves to Rock. It was around this time that the Seventh-day Adventists noticed that the members seemed to be more devoted to Rock than they were the teachings of the religion. In one of his first overtly narcissistic acts, he agreed to marry Giselle, partly to keep her in the group and partly to fool the Seventh-day Adventists and the media. On the five-hour drive back from Montreal after the wedding, he sat in the truck cab with two of his closest female members while Giselle was made to sit on a mattress in the open back of the truck. In mid-1978, a leukemia patient was brought to Rock's clinic. Rock recommended that she stop all medications and they be replaced with grape juice and other health foods, which he, of course, sold. And within weeks, she was dead.
Red flag, red flag.
Yeah, so at the moment in this healthy living clinic, the Seventh-day Adventist church are kind of giving him health food to sell. So he's supposed to be selling this and giving the money to the church, you know, and it's kind of under their banner at the moment, you know, that he's doing this.
So it looks
it's
legit.
It's Seventh-day Adventist approved.
Which looks okay.
So it looks legit at the moment, but now he's done this. Obviously, his woman's dead, so he's going to get in some shit now from them. So this attracted the attention of the Seventh-day Adventists, and Pastor Zita got together and voted with them, and they voted Rock out of the religion. Just after this happened, Rock arranged marriages between members who went ahead unquestioningly, as they thought if Rock had arranged it, there must be a reason for it. By the spring of 1978, Giselle had had enough of Rock staying up into the night talking with the female followers, and she told Rock she wanted to leave, despite being pregnant with their first child. So without hesitation, Rock just punched her in the face and didn't allow her to leave her room for 2 days. So the cult had reached a turning point. They now had no health food products from the SDA to sell, and debt collectors were appearing regularly, and there was, of course, the death of the leukemia patient while in Rock's care. So with 12 women, 6 men and 2 children, he decided it was time to move, telling them that Judgment Day was coming on the 17th of February the following year. But he was God's chosen one, and so long as his followers were with him, they would be saved. That old chestnut.
That old chestnut, eh?
So he said they needed to leave the evils of society behind and get back to nature. They walked for 3 days and found somewhere sufficiently isolated, being a 4-hour walk away from even the closest road, and the cult set about building a compound from scratch, which they named Eternal Mountain, with Rock directing from the sidelines. Rock also gave everyone new names from the Bible, and he renamed himself Moses. That old chestnut kept them up all night giving speeches, and food was in short supply. Rock began to teach that society was bad and everything inside the cult was just and good, taking confessions from the members and using any small issue in their past as an example of how awful society at large had been to them. After Giselle mentioned to Rock that some of the women on Eternal Mountain were lonely, Rock announced that he would take it upon himself to sleep with them. Giselle was upset that Rock had Giselle was upset that Rock had twisted her idea, but when she objected, Rock threw her to the ground, saying he was Moses and the conduit for God, so she would do as he said. He then announced that all previous marriages were annulled and all women were now married to Rock.
Red flag, red flag.
Yeah, definitely. So Rock spent his days bringing the women into the cabin for sex, and eventually many were pregnant. He also abandoned vegetarianism, and after years of being sober, he began drinking heavily, and the violence wasn't far behind. Rock viewed any child at Eternal Mountain that wasn't his as the lowest of the low, and he treated them like dogs, making them sleep apart from their parents. Once, when one member's six-month-old son wouldn't stop crying, he had her strip the baby naked and roll him in the snow outside until he turned blue. Soon he began to dish out violent punishment to members for the smallest infraction, including taking seconds at dinner. When one member confessed to thinking about leaving, Rock told her husband to cut off her little toe with an axe, which he did after Rock threatened to cut off all her toes if he didn't. In February 1979, when the apocalypse didn't happen, it's my birthday.
The apocalypse?
Yeah, well, I don't know the date of the apocalypse, but yeah, I was born February 79. That'd be good, wouldn't it? Birthday on the apocalypse. People started questioning Theriault's wisdom, but he defended himself by saying that time on Earth and where God is different. So it was just a miscalculation. In November 1980, a 23-year-old mental health patient named Guy Vier turned up at the cult. After some discussion, Rock allowed him to join, assigning him manual labour and forcing him to sleep outside. After a whole winter of this, Rock offered him a contract whereby he would be allowed a room in the house if he took on 24-hour care of the three children in the commune who didn't belong to Rock.
24-hour care? What?
Yeah.
Hang on, when can I sleep? Well, no, you're 24-hour care. Yeah. But I suppose it's
well,
on call, cool, isn't it? You're
yeah,
on call.
Yeah, you'd sleep when they sleep. If they get up in the night, though, it would be you, wouldn't it? Who'd have to go and deal with that?
Right.
And they were aged 2, 2 and 4. So there's some... One of them died, but the facts surrounding the lead-up to the death of the one aged 2, Samuel, they're vague. So warning here, there is child death. Some reports state that one night when he wouldn't stop crying, Guy Vier punched him in the face until he was unconscious. Remember, this kid's 2 as well. Hmm. But that the child could sit up by himself the next day and appeared okay. So Rock, however, decided that the problem with Samuel was that he was uncircumcised. So that night, Rock decided to perform surgery. He pumped pure ethanol into the child's stomach, thinking it would anaesthetise him, but before long, Samuel was dead from acute alcohol poisoning. He ordered the other members to incinerate the body.
What the fuck?
Rock took no responsibility for the child's death and blamed Guy Vier, who was put on trial. So, you know, obviously it's Rock that's killed him, but the story is that Guy Vier's punched him in the face because he wouldn't stop crying.
Yeah.
And then he died the next day.
So the outside sources discovered the death of a child then?
They do.
Or this is later on when they figure out and start going, where's everybody?
They will find out. Okay. It will be a factor. There's going to be another...
No outsideness yet.
There's going to be another child death in a bit as well. So, it's you know, it's coming. Yeah. He blamed Guy Vier, who was put on trial within the commune, being found not guilty through reason of insanity. Rock decided that Vier... the only reason the guy was classed as a mental health patient, I think, as well, he was suffering from severe depression. So it's not like that's, you know, that's the...
Old school.
That's his what he's supposed to be suffering from. I haven't found anything else to say that he was like, you know, he would have done
the old school way of looking at depression.
Yeah.
They're mentally ill.
So Rock decided that Vier needed to be castrated, and they put it to a vote within the group, with the result being a majority in favour of the surgery, with Rock reasoning to Vier that it would cure the headaches he'd been suffering from and that he had breathing problems due to excessive masturbation.
Who's wanking nuts?
That's how Rock's justifying it to the guy. This is his punishment, but he's saying it'll do him a favour because it'll cure the headaches he's been suffering from, and that apparently he's got breathing problems due to excessive masturbation. Pay attention, dear.
I am. It's just that was just like, what?
You just looked up when you heard masturbation.
It's true.
He had Vier write a letter of consent and agreeing to his status as a eunuch within the group. Members held Vier down while Rock tied an elastic band round his genitals and removed his testicles with a razor blade. Guy Vier was subjected to more torture over the next month at Rock's direction until he had enough, left the camp and walked to the nearest town, telling them that a toddler had been killed up on the mountain after being kicked in the head by a horse. When the authorities found out, they raided...
Why did he say that?
I don't know. They raided the compound, I suppose, because then he's not dropping Rock in it, essentially, is he? He's not grassing as such.
That's how one of my granddads died.
Really?
Kicked in the head by a horse.
Shit. When the authorities found out, they raided the compound, removing most of the children. Rock and some of the other members were held criminally responsible for the death of a child and received 2 years jail time. Giselle rented an apartment in the town where they were in prison, and all the members moved in there. The compound they built was bulldozed and burnt, but the members just saw it as a test. While in prison, Rock worked on his memoirs, which complained about his group being persecuted as they lived on the fringes of society, 5,000 copies of which were later released by a small Quebec publisher. In February 1984, Rock was released from prison, telling everyone that they needed to go back to the woods, and they found a place in Burnt River, Ontario, which is beautiful but really, really remote. I looked it up on Google as well. It's fucking beautiful. It's so nice. But yeah, it's just nothing. It's just woods. The cult constructed their own tools to make beams and planks and built an A-frame house as well as other buildings, all in just 5 months. And hence, that's why they're called the Ant Hill Kids. Because they work like ants.
Rocking the Ant Hill Kids.
Rock sent some of his trusted members down to the Niagara Peninsula, which is well known in Canada for producing fruit, and they brought back tons of it, which the cult began selling at roadside stands, as well as selling preserves and pies. However, Rock soon started drinking again, and the business soon began to decline. One of his favourite things to do when drinking was to put on his King's Jewels, in quotation marks, which was really just costume jewellery, and parade around.
His drinking costume?
Yeah, he used to get pissed and put on his fake crown.
Where's my drinking costume?
Yeah, totally. That's exactly what he was like. There's a few pictures of him online in it as well. He's such a dick. He also initiated orgies with all the women in the group, encouraging rivalries between them and even having them fight each other physically while he scored points. When Rock drank, which was now more often than not, the punishments for followers would get worse, including urinating on them and making a member lick another's anus after they'd done a poo. One time, a male member resisted and punched Rock in the face, the punishment for which was circumcision.
Jesus Christ.
I know.
No one's going to punch him in the face again.
I know, it's fucking crazy, isn't it? What is it with all this bloody circumcision and fucking castration? The local social workers began to take an interest in the children at the compound, because although they'd taken some of them away, obviously he's just fucking all the women all the time. Apparently he was just doing it loads and loads. They were like consistently pregnant. There was kids there all the time.
And these kids, so out there in the world somewhere, he's got a fuck ton of kids.
Yeah. I don't know if I wrote it down, actually. I'm sure he fucking fathered like 20 odd kids.
Okay.
Through the time here. 24 maybe? I'm not sure I noted that down. So at first they were taken in by Rock's bullshit and charm, But in 1984, when a bulletin was released across Canada detailing the death of the baby and the castration of Guy Veer, one social worker named Georgia Brown decided she was going to save the children of the cult, making monthly trips out to the middle of nowhere to check on them. Meanwhile, Rock was telling the children that social workers were Satan's helpers, so that they would run away from them when they came to the compound and they wouldn't talk to them. In January 1985, Gabrielle Lavallee, under orders from Rock, wrapped her 5-year-old son in a blanket and left him outside in a wheelbarrow for over an hour. And obviously he died because I'm fucking Canada in the middle of nowhere. Snow and all, it's January as well, so it's Canadian winter.
Whatever the reasoning?
Whatever she did that for.
Right, okay.
Fuck knows.
So this lady's
he's
bad
just
as...
He's just told her to do it and she's done it. He didn't like the kids. He didn't like the kids. He wanted the shagging. He didn't want the kids.
Well, he fucking needs to get fixed then, doesn't he?
Yeah, I know. Knowing this would be noticed by the social workers, they called a doctor and told him they'd just found the child dead, and the doctor wrote down SIDS as the cause, sudden infant death syndrome. Similar to cot death, isn't it? I suppose. No explanation for it. One of the members managed to leave, and she confirmed to Georgia Brown what was wrong with the children at Burnt River, stating that Rock would include them in group masturbation, mock crucifixion with nails driven through their clothes and holding them above fires or throwing them against walls and trees. When one member spoke against what he was doing, Rock immediately smashed a glass and cut his throat. The authorities raided the compound and removed the children again.
Thank fuck.
The court ruled that the children would not be returned to Burnt River, but there was not enough evidence to make any convictions. Okay, where are we? Someone who'd seen a copy of Rock's memoirs... through someone who'd seen a copy of Rock's memoirs, he was introduced to a Mormon psychiatrist, polygamy enthusiast, and someone who was interested in shamans, this guy called Dr. Grosbeck. Grosbeck was totally taken in by Rock and the idea of doing a paper or even a book on him. So in 1988, he visited the commune and was impressed, even brainstorming ideas to put a psychiatric hospital on the compound and saying that he would love to live that life. After his return to Utah, he wrote Rock a letter saying it wasn't feasible for him to move his practice out there, but with the inflated self-importance that Rock now felt after gaining approval from someone as recognised as Grosbeck, things were about to get much worse for the cult. Rock began drinking day in and day out, and the cruelty reached new heights. One day, after drinking a bottle of cognac, he became angry at a follower, Claude Ouliette, for no apparent reason, demanding as punishment that Claude tie an elastic band around his scrotum.
Again.
By the next morning, his scrotum was twice its normal size. The bands were removed. This is going to get quite horrible.
Oh, God.
The bands were removed, but about a month later, one of the testicles became infected, and after drinking heavily for most of the day, Rock decided he was going to operate. After finding Claude, this poor bloke, hiding in an outhouse, he took him back to the house, sliced open his scrotum with a razor, removing the infected testicle and cauterizing the wound with a hot iron.
Fucking hell!
He then...
He'd have passed out in pain, because that had been so severe.
Some of these people don't, though. Oh. It's fucking crazy. There's one that's going to get quite bad. And she just takes it, apparently. She doesn't scream, she doesn't pass out.
What is she, you, is she?
Ah. He then held a vote on whether to stone Claude. But when he was voted down, he picked up an acetylene torch and said he was going to look inside Claude's stomach.
For?
I don't know.
His car keys?
Who knows?
Where's my car keys? Yeah. Right, get Claude's stomach open.
What's that fucker? He swallowed them again. Claude, pack it in.
Or insert them.
Oh, God. Luckily, Claude managed to escape during the ensuing argument and hid out in the woods for days. Rock decided that he was going
to... In agony?
Yeah, totally. Rock decided that he was going to punish Giselle as she had run away the most. One evening, he picked up a knife and threw it across the room, gashing her thigh, then just walking away and going to bed. Despite other members attempting to stop the bleeding, when Rock woke up a few hours later, he decided he was going to operate. He heated up a metal file, and while other members held her down, he stuck the file into the wound, also pouring boiling water on it. Of course, a few weeks later, the cut became infected. Rock said he could fix it and spent 2 hours rubbing salt and olive oil into it. Just some of the other torture that Rock inflicted included one follower having her stomach burnt with an acetylene torch on the day she gave birth to her first child, being shot in the shoulder with a hunting rifle, having fingers and toes broken, teeth pulled, ribs broken with hammers, acetylene torch to the breasts,
what?
Being made to sit on a hot stove, and
why?
Being made to literally eat shit.
Why?
It's punishment.
For having a child?
I don't know. It's just fucking.
What
he
the fuck?
Just said it was punishment, and that's what they needed to
torture.
Suffer. They needed to suffer in life.
Why has nobody figured out that this guy's a fucking raging lunatic?
It'd be terrifying, wouldn't it? Imagine that. You see him getting pissed up like through the day, and you know that later on that night he's going to be on the lookout for someone to fucking slice up.
I like the word lunatic now. Should called it the lunatic podcast.
Should have done. So by 1988, follower Solange Boillard decided she was going to leave the cult. She also let slip to another member that she wasn't feeling well that day due to some sort of stomach problem. Well, Rock heard about both of those things and he started talking about surgery. One day, Rock had been drinking and he told a member to overwork Solange despite her stomach feeling worse than ever. He had other members bring Solange to the bakery where he strangled her and another follower until they began to turn blue, stuffing clothes into their mouths. Rock asked some of the women, including Gabrielle, to fetch his jewels, but Gabrielle, seeing her chance, escaped for Quebec with nothing but what she was wearing. Rock told Solange he was going to operate on her, and she got undressed willingly and laid on the kitchen table. He had another follower make up an enema of molasses and olive oil, roughly jamming his fingers in and out of her anus and then doing the same with a plastic tube, causing shit to spill out and cover the kitchen table. So he did that for about half an hour, and then he told her to turn over, he was going to operate on her liver. He repeatedly punched her in the stomach, then making a cut below her ribs, which he stuck his fingers inside.
What hospital would they punch you to get in? Oh,
no.
We're going to work on your stomach, but we punch it first. What? Why?
So he made a cut 4 inches below her ribs. Made a cut below her ribs, and he stuck his fingers inside. He pulled out a 4-inch-long piece of intestine with his bare hands. Laying it on the table, he declared that the operation was over.
Success!
One of the followers sewed up the incision with twine, and Rock ordered Solange to get up and walk it off.
Oh, walk it off. Stop moaning.
Fucking horrendous. The next morning, after Rock had ordered Solange to take a bath, she was found with blood pouring from her mouth. She died soon after, the cause being acute peritonitis caused by digestive chemicals leaking into her abdominal cavity. Because it's just, oh God, it makes me feel so bad to think he's just literally with his bare hands pulled some of your guts out.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fucking horrible. After Solange died, it only gets worse for her and all. I tell you, that's not the end of it. After Solange died, Rock, ever the drama queen, attempted many pathetic suicide attempts, and when they failed, he absolved himself by saying that God didn't want him to die. About a week later, Rock visited the leader of another Seventh-day Adventist offshoot cult in Quebec, speaking to him about his worries that the authorities would remove the 2 children that were about to be born at his compound. The leader offered to let the women come and give birth there, but in one of their conversations, Rock said, "You know, the ultimate religious experience is for a man to eat one of his male offspring." When he returned to his own compound, he announced that he was pregnant with Solange, the woman...
Okay.
The woman who just died.
Red flag, red flag.
The followers thought he was speaking metaphorically. Later that night, after Rock had been... drinking heavily, he began to blame Giselle.
It's always when he's drinking heavily.
Yeah, who had returned to the compound after running away. So he blamed her for Solange's death. Rock ordered one of the women to scalp Giselle, but she refused. However, the next woman he asked did it without question. When Giselle was bald and bleeding, Rock took the knife, sliced open the vein on her head, and passed out. A few days later, Rock ordered a follower to dig up Solange's corpse. When the body was back in the house, he ordered another follower to douse the body in vinegar, cut open the stomach and remove the uterus and kidneys, placing them in a jar and reburying Solange's body. For the next 4 days, Rock told the followers her death was their fault and God was calling for all of their deaths in return, while beating them, throwing knives and shooting the rifle at them. Rock ordered Solange's body to be exhumed once again, declaring that the body needed a lobotomy. He had a follower, this is really unpleasant by the way, he had a follower drill a hole in the skull and widened it with a knife. Rock masturbated in the hole in front of the group and had followers bury the body again. 2 days later, he asked Giselle to dig up the body again, but she'd had enough and convinced Rock to cremate the body.
Rock, what are you doing? Having a wank in the hole.
Yeah. This dead person needs... This person has been dead for, like, what, a week by then, needs a lobotomy. That lobotomy consists of me knocking one out into her skull.
Fucking hell.
There you go. What you're saying. There's always a first for everything, dear, especially when you're with me.
Yeah.
By this time, Giselle was beginning to have had enough and she'd been travelling back to her parents' house in Quebec City more and more often, which pissed Rock off no end. Rock decided to take out his anger on Gabrielle, who he saw as a threat due to the fact that she used to be a nurse. So that's threatening his medical knowledge. Obviously, he knows that he's just fucking... just talking shit. What he's doing. In 1986, Gabrielle had suffered, this is really bad, ladies, cross your fucking legs, because this is awful, it's making me cringe just thinking about it, it's fucking horrible. In 1986, Gabrielle had suffered a prolapsed uterus after giving birth. All the manual labour that the members were required to perform had caused the prolapse to hang 3 inches out of her vagina. Oh, I don't even want to go there. But Rock refused to let her see a doctor, claiming that he could fix it. Oh, sorry, girls. The first thing he tried was to have her lay on the table, punch in the uterus and attempting to force it back into her body. When that didn't work, he carved a cone-shaped piece of wood, which he attached to a harness, and he jammed it into her vagina to keep the uterus in place. She lasted about a day and then she escaped to a neighbouring house but returned to the cult the next day. Over the next year, Rock tried other ways to solve Gabrielle's issue, including tying a string round the uterus and yanking it like it was a loose tooth. Oh! Gabrielle eventually managed to sneak away and visit the hospital where they performed a partial hysterectomy. When she returned, she told Rock it had just gotten better on its own. Oh, God, it's so fucked up.
My first way of doing it was going to be punching it.
He punches everything, doesn't he?
Because he's pissed.
Fucking just smack it.
Is he English?
It's fucking crazy. Fucking hell. Oh, but that is just like... that's bad. In 1988, after Gabrielle had again escaped to the neighbouring family, the Dudmans, and returned to the cult, the family decided they were going to speak to Rock about the way he was treating the women. After the Dudmans left, he heard Gabrielle complaining about a toothache, and grabbing the pliers, he pulled out 8 of her teeth, but left the one which was actually causing her pain.
Did I get it? No, it's not that one, it's Nick. No, you haven't got it. No, 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 you've missed every one, but you've taken all my teeth out.
Mm. As she stumbled around the room, Rock...
Bet he's pissed, wasn't he?
Yeah, of course. He's always pissed. Mm. Rock took out his hunting knife, threatening to stab her in the stomach. She grabbed at the knife blade and she ended up severing 2 of the tendons in her hand. She managed to escape to a women's shelter in a hospital, but Rock rang her and promised to quit drinking, so she returned. It wasn't long, however, before Rock began drinking again and started complaining about how the hospital had fixed her hand. He broke the cast off her arm, pulled open the stitches and tore out the wires that had been holding her hand together. Ugh. After this, Gabrielle again escaped, but she returned again. Fucking crazy.
Yeah.
In the months after Solange's death, Rock's hold over the followers began to loosen and they were running away more frequently. On the night of July the 26th, Rock had been drinking and started boasting about his skills as a surgeon. Most of the members by now knew that something bad was about to happen, and many of them ran and hid in the woods. He called Gabrielle over, saying he wanted to check on her injured hand, so it was going to get bad again. He had put her hand on the table and without pause drew out his hunting knife and stabbed her hand, impaling it into the table. After she'd been there for 45 minutes, her arm began to turn blue from loss of blood, and Rock decided he should operate. He took a small curved carpet knife.
He was the one that put the fucking hole there. Didn't
yeah,
it?
It was
gonna
doing
operate.
Fine.
I'm
going to
operate
doing fine.
Into, on your thing, which wasn't a problem. That's a problem.
Yeah.
I'm going to now fix the problem that I caused.
Yeah.
Wow.
So taking a little carpet knife from a toolbox, he started carving chunks of flesh from her arm halfway between shoulder and elbow until the bone had been exposed on all sides. He freed her hand from the table, but he left the knife in there, and he led her outside to a tree stump and had other followers hold her down while he picked up a big cleaver and hacked away at the bone, finally breaking it and amputating the arm. The wound was dipped in saline solution and sewn up with twine. About 2 weeks later, Rock announced that the stump had gangrene and would need another operation. He pinned her between his legs and began hacking at her stump with scissors, and then cut out a chunk from her right breast, claiming that it was to redirect the infection elsewhere. He then hit her in the head with the blunt side of an axe, giving no reason at all. After this, Gabrielle escaped and she slept in the forest for the night. One of Rock's loyal followers found her and returned her to the commune, where Rock ordered the followers to bind her. He heated up a section of the drive shaft taken from one of the trucks with his acetylene torch and proceeded to jam it into her stump over and over. 3 days later, she escaped for the final time, showing up at the hospital with an unbelievable story about a car accident. However, it was common knowledge to the police that Rock was abusive, but until now they'd had no solid evidence. When Gabrielle admitted to having been at the compound, they immediately issued a warrant and headed up there. When they arrived, the compound was empty. Rock and a couple of his most loyal followers had left on a bakery run, and the other followers, seeing their chance after witnessing the violence inflicted on Gabrielle, had scattered. When he returned from Quebec, Rock realised he was a wanted man, and he and the other followers that were with him hid out in the woods. The police discovered them the next day after their dogs tracked them down. Giselle eventually gave a full account of all the cruelties to investigators, including the murder of Solange. Rock Thériault was eventually sentenced to life without parole based on a report compiled by social worker Georgia Brown. Three of the original female followers still stood by Rock, even opening a bakery close to where he was imprisoned. In 2000, he was transferred to Dorchester Penitentiary. Yeah, right. And in 2002, he was rejected for parole and he never applied again. In 2009, he caused controversy when he tried to sell his artwork and poetry on USA-based website murderauction.com.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I did look on there.
Yeah, I'll be looking at that.
I did look on there. They didn't have much interest in stuff like
that. Okay.
So, yeah. But his work was prevented from leaving the prison once officials were made aware. On February 26, 2011, 63-year-old Rock Thériault was found dead near his cell after an altercation with his cellmate Matthew Gerard MacDonald, a 60-year-old convicted murderer from Newfoundland. He pled guilty to second-degree murder and was sentenced to life imprisonment, having already been serving a life sentence for the previous murder charge. No skin off his nose. It's really quite amusing what he says, though. MacDonald had stabbed Thériault in the neck with a shiv, walked to the guard station and handing them the weapon said, "That piece of shit is down on the range. Here's the knife. I've sliced him up."
Fucking good work.
There you go.
Cellmate. It's one of those things, it's like, I know Dr. Dre is not actually a doctor. I know, he just makes a few beats
yeah,
and does some rapping.
Yeah, it's not
going to
come in and go, right, come on, castration,
have you got anything
mate?
I can drunkenly punch into operation?
Come
this
on,
guy.
Let me punch you in the liver.
That's absolutely insane. Well, cults part three.
There you go.
Thanks. It's just like bit. It's just like, oh my God, what is going on?
I know, it's a bit crazy, isn't it? But yeah, again, with that one, there's loads to look into. You know, if you want to go and search that up on the internet, if you think it sounds interesting, there is loads more details that we just haven't really had time to cover, you know.
It's just a massive thing, isn't it, cults? I didn't realise when we started doing it, you're like, let's do cults. We thought it was probably one episode.
I did. I thought it was one episode. And I thought we could squeeze loads into that. I was like, yeah, we can get all 10 cults in an episode, you know.
That's crazy. But that was, absolutely insane. The fact that he carried on doing it, and it feels so sorry for Giselle, who just kept coming back and coming back because she was completely under the fucking spell.
All of them, you know, the torture that those people went through.
But the fact that they would go and hide, it's like me when I was a kid, when I knew my mum was coming with me with a wooden spoon to give my legs a smack. I'd go and hide.
You know, he's coming all pissed up and he's got a knife. It's like, fucking, that's terrifying. And you're like a 4-hour walk from a road or anything.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
Absolutely insane. Well,
there you go.
Don't start any cults, people.
Don't start cults.
Unless
don't join
nice
cults.
No, actually, don't bother, because they always sometimes start all right.
They usually go tits up. Just don't even go there.
Fucking hell. Well, there we go, ladies and gentlemen and non-binary people. Cults.
Yep. Cults is done.
Fucking hell. Well, that's brilliant. Well done on all that research.
Thanks.
That's really good.
Excellent.
So, to make it easier next time, ladies and gents, we're covering werewolves.
We are. We're doing werewolves.
That's a fun one. And you've actually found a couple of cases of people pretending to be or thinking that they are
under the illusion of
werewolves and actually doing some murder.
Yep. And so we're talking proper werewolf murder as well, like ripping out hearts and shit.
Oh, shit.
It's crazy. Werewolf murderers, actually.
But I tell you what, I'm going to have to really dissect and everything you've been saying about these cults. I really need to decompromise. That's decompress.
Definitely.
All that, but that was just interesting. I'll look up some of the YouTube stuff and the
I'll post some more links.
Quite interesting.
Yeah, I'll post some more links on the Facebook page for everyone else and stuff as well. The anime from Omshun Rikyo and
Rocking the Anthill Kids.
One I've really never heard of, but it's fucking insane.
See, Dr. Jacob produced Rocking the Anthill Kids album.
Oh my God.
Real doctors here.
Yeah.
Unofficial doctors here.
Amazing.
Right. Well,
thanks for listening.
So thank you from you.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Carry on joining. It's amazing so much that so many of you listening all around the world and stuff. It's pretty good.
It's well
loads
cool.
Loads of downloads now. So it's good. So thanks. Please let anyone know into the old true crime.
Yeah,
I know there's
millions
of true crime podcasts out there, but right, cool. Well, brilliant. Next time then, episode 20. Fucking hell.
Yeah,
we're clocking up.
Yeah, werewolves and werewolf murderers, and fucking
werewolf cults.
Or going to lunacy and that. Oh yeah, that'd be good, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, good night from me.
Good night from me.
And make sure those doors and windows are locked.
Yeah.